This is the United States Dressage Federation's official podcast. Hello and welcome to episode 181. I'm Chris Stafford. Coming up on the show, we'll have our Meet the Authors segment with renowned coach and author Mary Wanless, who will be here to talk about her new book, The New Anatomy of Rider Connection. And then later on in our education segment, Dr. Werner will be talking about the treatment for arthritis in the hocks and pastons. But first, we'd like to remind you, of course, that the views of the host and guests of this podcast do not necessarily reflect the views of the USDF or its members. And we begin with an item of news. An international contingent of dressage riders arrived at the Tryon International Equestrian Centre for the FEI World Equestrian Games Tryon 2018 Dressage Test Event CDI 3-star from April 19th through the 22nd. Kerry Pacey-Glass and Adrian Lyle placed first and second respectively in the Grand Prix and Grand Prix Special, with Perry Glass achieving a personal best in the Grand Prix Special on a score of 75.957%. And looking ahead to the World Equestrian Games later this summer, there was a final qualifier in Del Mar, California from April the 26th to the 29th for combinations aiming to be eligible for the World Equestrian Games team selection process. And following the competition, the selectors meet to determine a shortlist of up to 8 athletes who will then compete in Europe. And you can stay up to date on news and information about the U.S. Equestrian Federation's dressage programs and teams by following USA Dressage on Facebook and using the hashtag USA Dressage. Mary Wanless is the author of the highly successful The Natural Rider, Ride With Your Mind, For the Good of the Rider, For the Good of the Horse, Ride With Your Mind Essentials, and New Ride With Your Mind Clinic. She has also produced 8 training videos, and as well as teaching riders of all abilities from club level to international in the UK and the USA, she runs dismounted workshops and gives lecture demonstrations. She also lectures internationally on learning, body-mind integration, and personal development. Mary's latest book, The New Anatomy of Rider Connection, was released in September 2017, and she joins me now to tell us about it. Mary, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Well, we're going to be talking about The New Anatomy of Rider Connection that was published in the fall of last year, Structural Balance for Rider and Horse. First of all, give us a snapshot, if you would, a synopsis of the book.
Well, the book is based on fairly recent understandings of what is known as the fascial net. And fascia, everyone has seen as the skin around a chicken leg. If you eat a chicken leg, you can see the white skin around the muscles. But fascia really is very much more than that. It wraps all the muscles around the outside, and it also wraps individual groups of muscle fibers and individual muscle fibers. And at the end of the muscle, those fibers coalesce and become the tendon, and then the tendon joins in with the ligaments around the joint and the joint capsule and the ligaments on the other side and the tendon on the other side and the muscle on the other side. So whilst the history of anatomy dissects individual muscles and just thinks of the origin and the insertion and what that muscle does, understanding fascia means that you begin to understand how muscles work in chain. So you could say that fascia is to muscles what sausage skins are to sausages, and it gets muscles to work in chains. So the way these chains operate and the balance between them and the tension within the chains, and especially the fascia, kind of determines how athletic the body is and how well it works. And that could be the horse or the rider.
So it's basically the network. Then the fascia is the network that joins all of those moving parts together. So what inspired you to take this approach then and look at the fascia as distinct to what you've analyzed in the past with your other books?
So I would say it was a long time ago that I was beginning to sense that muscles worked in chains. And then it was probably about 2005 that a friend's Pilates teacher said to me, "Oh, I've got something you'd really like to look at." And it was a series of posters made by Tom Myers, who wrote the book Anatomy Trains, who has been one of the big proponents of this way of looking at the body. And as soon as I saw those posters and realized that work had been done, I went, this is it. This is the guy who's researched the stuff I really want to know more about. And I'd already intuited a number of the chains and had a fair idea of how they worked. And so then I started studying Tom's work, and I met him first in 2007, maybe 2008. And we started collaborating on what became a couple of articles for Dressage Today, and did that with a view to that becoming a book. And that book took a while to materialize, but it is The New Anatomy of Rider Connection.
So when you look at this interwoven network, if you like, and connecting the horse and rider, what are you trying to achieve then? And who would be your main audience? Because this may be, you know, several levels deeper than some riders maybe are looking at right now, and they may have been one of your students in the past. What are you hoping to entice them to do? Where are you wanting to lead them with this book, Mary?
So I think the bottom line is that people recognize a talented rider, but don't know what it is that makes that rider talented. So most people can look and go, oh, she's really talented, but they couldn't tell you she's really talented because of this, 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 and this. All the work on fascia really tells you what talent is. And I think we hide behind the word talent. The word really means she's really good at it, but we don't know why. And there's a why to this, and it has an awful lot to do with the fascial net. So it's like a veritable spider's web within the body. But on the most basic level, you could say that the spine is like a mast held up by guy ropes. So you've got a guy rope down the front of the body, and a guy rope down the back of the body, and a guy rope down the right, and a guy rope down the left on the most simple level. And if those guy ropes are in balance, then the spine will stay upright, kind of like the central pole of a tent. But as soon as the guy ropes aren't in balance, then things start leaning and bending and twisting and getting disorganized. And bringing the guy ropes into balance makes a huge difference to riders. But the problem is that people might be told to sit straight or do this and do that. But willpower and obedience will fail when you're dealing with guy ropes in the fascial net that have unequal tensions. And I've developed ways of evening the tension in the fascial net and making it into a more robust system. So one of the things that's really interesting is that you need, like on a tent, you need the guy ropes to be fairly taut. As soon as the guy ropes aren't taut, the structure is not resilient and robust. It will start collapsing. And what makes a talented rider talented is actually the tension within those fascial guy ropes. And most of us are needing to learn to get more tension within those guy ropes. And the other thing that's very interesting is that those guy ropes, the fascial net, is the organ of force transmission within the body. And as riders, we should be really interested in the concept of force transmission, because we want to be able to get our horses to transmit force from the back of them towards the front of them in the way that we want, and not to go off in spurious directions. And we need to be able to transmit force in our own bodies before we can get the horse really transmitting force well. And I think we're way too hooked on the idea of force absorption and not half clued up enough on the possibilities and the importance of force transmission.
So what you're doing actually is physicalizing this. This is purely the horse and rider physicality in terms of your talent, as you referred to, how to identify more closely what a talent actually means, distinguishing from the mind. I'm curious though, because I know how, you know, you have practiced, you know, the riding with your mind and that being a separate concept in a way, but now how do you bridge the talent from the physical to the mental then? And how do you do that in this book?
So ride with your mind is saying as much as anything else that your muscles are like puppets, which need strings. The puppets can't do anything without a puppeteer. And the mind really is what sends directions and signals to make the muscles happen. And focus and awareness and moment by moment attention are the name of the game. And if you want to improve any skill, it requires that level of focus and noticing. Skill does not get built any other way, especially when you're not naturally talented, which part of that probably means you have naturally good focus. And maybe you make improvements unconsciously, which you then can't explain to anybody. But people who aren't talented can only change the patterns within their body by being very conscious. So the mind is central to everything. It can't happen without a really focused, organized way of being.
We're coming back to the book and really how you've laid out this book in quite detail, obviously technical detail here, how this all interweaves together. And first of all, let's break it down. How did you break it down into the specific chapters then, from front, back and sides to lateral and arms and the deep front line? I mean, it's very many layers to it.
Yes, it was broken down into those chapters because that's the way the researchers have broken it down prior to me. So I am following established work in the field in the way I've broken down. And actually, it's what works really well. I mean, as a riding coach, I spend much of my time with new clients getting balance between the front of the body and the back of the body. Because if the front is long and the back is short, you'll be hollow-backed. And if the front is short and the back is long, you'll be round-backed. And very few people can easily get themselves to vertical and neutral. And by neutral, I mean that if you had a string or elastic from your collarbone to your pubic bone and the nape of your neck to your tailbone, they'd be the same length. So in theory, that's an easy idea. But in practice, people don't do that. I mean, so few riders are both vertical and neutral. And addressing the lines and thinking about it that way is the first inroad into that. And it starts with the front and the back of the body, and then it goes to the sides of the body, and then we can start looking at the arms and other factors in the body. And then the harder ones are the lines that make us twist and rotate and side bend and really contort ourselves. And then also the lines that form the core of the rider and the horse. So that schema really already existed, and I built the book around an existing schema, and it really has matched with the way I've approached it, over years. So there was really no conflict within that schema from what I already knew and already did.
So you're basically building the roadmap then in this book, Mary?
Yes, you could say that. And everybody starts organizing the front and the back, and then starting to organize the two sides, and then starting to organize the connection of their arms and how robust their body is as a box, and then getting into the trickier stuff of twists and turns and rotations and weirdo kinks that happen in both people's and horses' bodies.
So in summary then, Mary, what would you like your readers to understand from this? If anyone's thinking of buying this book, what would you like them to really focus on and hope to take away from it?
Okay, so one of the big things they're going to take away is that we have a lot of misunderstandings within our conventional theory. So one of the biggest misunderstandings is the whole concept of just relaxing. Because if you just relax and you make yourself like a sort of and you flop a little bit, your fascial net becomes loose. And a loose fascial net makes a wibbly wobbly disorganized rider who cannot organize the horse's movement. There has to be positive tension within the guy ropes of the fascial net. And one of the things that I find really interesting is it's the fascia that's the organ of force transmission within the body, and also that fascia has 6 times as many nerve endings as muscles. Our sense of feel, when we start to really begin to feel and sense our own body and the horse's body, is based in the kind of nerve endings in fascia that measure the pulls on it. They measure the tension in the fascia, the pulls on it. They measure shear forces between different layers. And those are what we start to sense when we develop more feel. And once we get our own fascial net under tension, we start to get the horse's fascial net under appropriate tension. So if you think of a stallion prancing in front of a mare, he's really kind of like a brand new stuffed toy horse with lots of filling out and appropriate tension in his body. And that's what dressage riders crave in a way that's under their control. But so few people can A, generate, and B, match the forces of, to remain, you know, safe and secure and the cause of what happens rather than the victim of what happens when their horse gets that bit more hyped up. So most people are looking in the wrong direction for the answers. They're looking for the answers in relaxation where they should be looking for the answers in positive tension. And I can have everybody do a very quick exercise if you want that starts to demonstrate some of that.
Sure. Yes, absolutely. Give them an idea.
Okay. So we can do an exercise on, this is the superficial front line. And there's one line of tissue that could be dissected out in one piece, and it goes behind your ears, down the muscle that goes each side of your neck that is pretty, it goes diagonally back towards your ear from each side of your collarbone. It's the sternocleidomastoid, but it's the kind of muscle you can get your fingers around. And it goes each side of your sternum and becomes your abdominals going all the way to your pubic bone. And then starts again actually from the point of your hips as your quads going down the front of your thigh and over your kneecaps and around your kneecaps in the tendon that your kneecap is embedded in and down the front of your calf to the outside of your shin to the tendons around the front of your ankle and all the tendons along the top of your foot to the top of your toes. And that, whilst it's in two pieces, the line works as one piece when we just think about the front back plane. And what you want to do is sit on a pretty firm chair so that you're in neutral. You want to be vertical. The length of your front matches the length of your back. And put the heel of one foot on top of just before where your toes begin on your bottom foot. So you're probably best off here in bare feet, but it can be done with shoes if you've got the right kind of shoes. No high heels, obviously. So you put the heel of one foot on top of just before your toes begin. And you're going to, as it were, attempt to lift the toe end of the bottom foot off the floor whilst keeping the heel on the floor. But your top foot prevents this. So you're trying to lift your bottom foot, or at least the toes of your bottom foot and the ball of the foot, keeping the heel on the floor. But you're preventing this from happening with the top foot. And as you do this, you want to feel where you feel the effects of this. So the chances are that you can feel structures firm up in the top of your foot and pretty certainly in the front of your shin. And that will probably go into your quads. Most people can get this pretty easily to into their quads. And from there, the feeling could go. So we're looking at this feeling in the bottom leg, right? The top leg is just a tool to get us organizing the bottom leg. So on that side of your body that belongs to the bottom leg, we would hope that from your pubic bone, at least partway up your front, you can begin to feel a change. And that change could potentially go all the way to your collarbone and even up into your neck. And it will be a feeling of firmness and tension. It might start to hurt a little bit. I'm starting to really feel it's a bit of a burn at this point. So let's just relax a minute and just let that go and take the foot, the top foot off the bottom foot and just let everything chill out for a minute. And in just a moment, we'll do that again. So let's put same foot on top of the same foot. You can try and lift the toes of the bottom foot, but your top foot prevents that. The heel stays on the floor on the bottom foot. Can you feel an effect in the top of your foot, front of your shin, quads? Can you get that effect to go at least part way up your abdominals? And if you imagine that train of muscle like a guitar string, would it play a note? And I think the answer would be yes. And then let the whole thing go, take the top foot away, let those muscles relax and ask yourself, would they play a note? And I think the answer will be no. So we could actually do this with the other leg on the other leg. So you're going to put the foot that was on the bottom on the top of the other foot. You're going to keep the heel of the bottom foot off the floor and attempt to lift your toes and the ball of your foot against the pressure of the top foot. Can you feel that in the top of your foot, your shin, just the outside of your calf bone, over your knee, into your quads? Can you get the feeling to go up the front of your body on the same side, in your abs and going up towards your collarbone? It might even go into your neck. and ask yourself, would that guy rope, as it were, play a note if it was a guitar string? And then let it go and ask yourself again, would it play a note? And I think the answer would have been yes when you had that resistance and no when you don't. And once you get the sense that the string would play a note, then you're using it in the way that talented riders using it without knowing what they're doing or how what they're doing is different to what average riders do. And that, I think, is a very neat exercise to just give you a little inroad into feeling one of the lines working well. And many riders probably go, oh, my gosh, you're kidding me. It can't be that hard. There can't be that much tension. Surely not. This can't be right. But I promise you, this is what's going on for talented riders.
Very helpful, Mary. Well, thank you very much for that exercise and for explaining the new book and the new anatomy of rider connection, Structural Balance for Rider and Horse. That's Mary Wanless, the author. And the foreword is by Thomas W. Myers, creator of Anatomy Trains. Mary, thank you so much for taking the time to come on the program and telling us about the new book, and good luck with it.
Thank you very much.
And we would like to thank Trafalgar Books for working with us to select and schedule the authors and for their generous 20% discount for listeners on this book and all non-sale items at horseandriderbooks.com. Just use the promo code USDFPOD. Shipping is free within the US, and we'll post the discount code and the direct link in the show notes accompanying this episode. And finally, in our education segment, we have an excerpt from What's New in the Treatment of Lameness, presented by Dr. Laura Werner and recorded at the 2017 Adequan USDF Annual Convention. In this segment, Dr. Werner talks about the treatments for arthritis in the hocks and pasterns.
We're just going to go through just quickly to arthritis of the hock and pastern, and this is one of the most common problems of hind limb lameness, both in English and Western performance horses. So diagnosis of arthritis in these areas is obviously made by a thorough lameness examination by your veterinarian. That would include flexion exams, analgesics, or nerve blocks. And a lot of times we will try to perform those nerve blocks directly in the joint to get a really definitive diagnosis. Sometimes nerve blocks, like I said, we all wish they were black and white. Sometimes, unfortunately, they're not that clear. So sometimes we'll go back, block a horse several different ways with the regional nerve blocks or with the joint blocks in the joint to try to determine and make sure that's the definitive cause of the horse's lameness. So other methods are obviously radiographs or x-rays that we're all familiar with, nuclear scintigraphy, and then there are some of these cases, especially when it comes to the hock joints, where it's a kind of complicated area, that we'll perform an MRI on some of these cases. The lower hock joints in the horse are in very close association with the proximal suspensory area, and so sometimes these lamenesses can be a bit more confusing, both to the owners as well as us as veterinarians. And so the MRI definitely provides sort of a gold standard of diagnosis when you're trying to select whether the horse has a high suspensory problem or a hock problem. Most horses have two legs, and usually whatever they have going on in one leg, they also have a similar process, though usually not as severe in the opposite leg. So obviously initial therapy for most cases of arthritis of the pastern or the hocks, normally corticosteroids are our first solution with joint injections. Also injectable and or oral joint supplements, including hyaluronan or glucosaminoglycans. Components of that joint fluid will help as well too. Non-steroidals. We also spoke about the Tildren or Osfos, those bisphosphonates, and those have also shown clinical improvement in cases of arthritis. Shockwave as well too will help with that bone interface or the joint surface area, as well as corrective shoeing. So most of the horses can be maintained in performance, but a smaller percentage of these horses, somewhere reported 25 to 50%, just don't respond to our standard treatments. Some of these horses will show just diminishing returns, so become harder to get a response from the same joint injection that you did, or it's where it's becoming what the horse needs more frequent treatment to be able to be performing at the same level. So that's when we need to think about other options. So when we look at other options, some of these horses we will try to surgically fuse the joint, or that procedure is called an arthrodesis. Obviously, it's not something we go to as a first response, so we want obviously a definitive diagnosis lameness in these, so we want to make sure it's the lameness is isolated to that particular joint. So with everything we've talked about that we do is important, that these horses are no longer becoming responsive to medical management, and the horse is unable to perform at the level that it should. So other techniques previously have involved either surgical drilling or plates. And, you know, in these type of cases where we put the plate on to secure the lower hock joints and try to stabilize those and promote fusion, again, the complication rate with these is extremely high. And some of these horses, in my experience, never quite come back to the level that you'd want them to. Some of these horses exhibit really severe postoperative pain. They lay down for long periods of time. They need, you know, have some lameness left. And so we just don't get the results that we'd like. It's a lot more difficult technique to put plates on these areas, as well as there's just increased complication anytime we put a lot of metal on a horse and open them up like that with a plate. It just, the complication rate is extremely high. Some of these horses take a year or more to come back to be at their level of performance. And so, like I said, just have a lot of these cases that don't end up the way we'd like them to turn out. Also in hocks, and some folks will do it in pasterns, but I've really gotten away from this, but you might hear about someone speaking about alcohol injections in a hock. It's a very risky technique. You have to make sure that these joints don't communicate. So we need to do that with a dye study. If that alcohol gets outside of the tissues, it can be extremely painful for the horse and do a lot more damage than what you've got to start with. So like I said, it's a technique that I don't recommend. So the alcohol basically just causes death of those cartilage cells. And in one study, they said about 30% had fusion of the hock joints after alcohol. Another substance that we'll use as well too to chemically fuse them is about 50 to 88% success rate. But again, I don't find that this technique has been very successful. Some disadvantages too, it's difficult with severe arthritis to actually inject those areas. You may not get actually complete fusion of the joints. The good things are though about it, it's minimal equipment, it's relatively inexpensive. These horses can be very painful again after the procedure. We've needed to do epidurals to manage their pain, or you know, put them on pain relieving type drips. They can be quite painful after this. I've also seen a few cases where the alcohol or the substance has leaked out, actually caused very extreme damage to that nerve in the affected suspensory area, and those horses were lame as a result of that. So again, it's not without complication. So a newer technique, and this is again one that's been out for several years now, uses the laser to actually fuse these hock joints. And the laser causes local destruction of the cartilage in the affected areas, and also with temperatures greater than about 62 degrees Celsius, it actually vaporizes the joint fluid in those areas, and it actually helps tighten the tissue and joint capsules around those areas as well too with the heat. And we'll just use radiographic guidance. The horses do have to be anesthetized for this technique, but we'll just place needles through the joints and we make sure they communicate, as we want to be able to cool off the laser as we're also passing the laser fiber through these needles. So we have a couple in each spot and we use the saline to kind of help cool off the tissue around it as we engage the laser. So again, we'll do multiple locations. So we'll put several needles in each joint. We'll pass the laser fiber through each of those locations, as well as irrigate at the same time with saline to keep the rest of the tissues cool. There's actually been a 90% success rate reported with these. And as well as, I think in my experience, this technique has been very successful. Oftentimes radiographically, they don't necessarily look like they're fused. So there's always a question mark whether how completely fused the joint is. Obviously for this, we do need the appropriate laser equipment. So not everyone has access to that. The great thing about these horses is postoperatively, they're not painful at all. The laser really does seem to help with the nerve endings that are in some of that bone. And these horses really have minimal post-op pain versus some of the horses were almost impossible to manage with the other techniques. It's a pretty short convalescence period, so we can get these horses back to work much faster. And really there's minimal side effects. So we might see some just skin reaction at the site where the laser went in, but we usually just treat that with a topical steroid cream. They do really well with it. So again, sometimes it's a little bit more difficult with the severe arthritis, but normally, even though radiographically, if we can't see a joint space, the fortunate thing is a lot of times that the laser fiber will still pass through that area. Some of these horses, like I said, some residual lameness has remained, but again, the results, I think, are a lot more promising with this technique versus the old techniques.
And our thanks again to Dr. Laura Werner for this segment that was recorded at the 2017 Adequan USDF Annual Convention. And finally, a reminder about your sport, your community, your circle of friends, and how you can donate today. The USDF Circle of Friends is essential to the mission of the US Dressage Federation. Your tax-deductible gift will have a significant impact in helping the USDF provide quality dressage education and programs. And you can find out more by visiting the USDF's secure online giving site at usdf.org/donate, or you can call the office at 859-971-7826 to make a contribution. And that's our show for this week. Our thanks again to Mary Wanless and Dr. Laura Werner. To listen to more episodes of the USDF's official podcast, you can download it directly from iTunes to any podcast app. And for more educational resources and information, be sure to visit eTrack online at usdf.org. I'll be back in 2 weeks' time for another episode of the USDF's official podcast. Until then, thank you for listening wherever you are in the world. And remember, the USDF is your connection to the American dressage community.